you expecting?
Welcome back to Reinvent Health, a podcast that cuts through the wellness noise to bring you real practical tools for living better. Today, I'm joined by the amazing Nikki Seberini, speaker, coach, and a woman who doesn't just talk about mental wellness, she lives it. Our topic today is your well-being program actually changing lives, or is it just ticking a box? Because let's be honest, too many corporate wellness programs are more about optics than outcomes. And before we dive in, a big thank you to our sponsor, UltraHuman, creators of the UltraHuman Ring, a game changer in health and performance tracking. Whether you're a leader or part of HR, tools like the UltraHuman Ring can offer real actionable insights into stress, recovery, sleep, and activity, which makes it a serious asset in any corporate wellness strategy that actually wants to make an impact. So if you're in HR, leadership, or just someone who's tired of the same old green juice and yoga class model, stay tuned. This one is going to get real. Right. So Nick, what I wanted to do was open up by talking about what you and I actually do for a living, because most of our listeners and our viewers think that we're just media people. We sit behind microphones or TV cameras for most of the time. We write books and we do a lot of talking, but this is not actually how we make our money. And the way we make our money is by working in organizations and working one-on-one with individuals in this kind of corporate context, or even in a private context, about how to get their lives in order. Kind of like a coach, but it goes a lot further than just coaching.
Exactly. Absolutely, Nick. So, and I love that because there's a lot more to what we do. Lots more.
Exactly. So what we did yesterday was, in preparation for this discussion this morning, we opened up on our social media channels a couple of questions to our followers about where they think the shortcomings are sitting in corporate healthcare, whether it is, you know, companies that they work for, companies that they own, what their experiences have been as far as medical aid wellness days are concerned. Where do they think these interventions are falling through? And we got three questions in a very short period of time. So a nice shout out to those who did, who felt passionate about to enough to write something down and send it through on short notice. So I'm going to start with Eric's comment. And he says, my frustration is the gamification of healthcare. While I understand how it works and why it enables engagement, it also causes me extra stress. Having to hit these goals while also having to show up in every other aspect of my life has become overwhelming. I'm already fit and I already got a gym, but I don't want to play the game anymore. I just want to be able to reach out to a real person a little more often than I realize is perhaps necessary. And that was really powerful because, yeah.
I think Eric speaks for so many people, Nick, and I think we can look at that in life, this gamification and this continual striving, because I think he's speaking to striving all the time and how overwhelming and exhausting that is. And our social media seems to feed that. So everyone has these little chunks of information, videos here and the next person. And I know with my clients, because my clients will sometimes come into a session and throughout the week, they've watched 10 different videos and each expert is telling them 10 different things. And each day they're trying the different things. It's this continual striving. Yeah. And that's just feeding this overwhelm, the stress, the anxiety that I'm not enough. I have to keep doing, keep being. So Eric, thank you for that. You speak for so many people. And when we look at the word well-being, it's not well-becoming, it's well-being. And really, I think you and I are so driven by that, Nick, is this idea, can we, is it possible, instead of this continual striving, ticking, opening the app, how many of this, how many of that, in this moment, right now, can I make the right choice? Can I be well? So I love what Eric said. Love it.
Yeah. No, I completely, and it resonates for me as well. I got very, very tired of checking my Discovery app every day to make sure that I got the points. Because honestly, it's exhausting. And when you actually look at the big overview, the only people winning is Discovery. You're not actually winning.
Exactly.
So I cancelled everything and I feel much more peaceful. I'm still going to the gym every day.
As well. Yes, and just to say, and it speaks to what Eric was saying, is it's changing all the time. You know, if they said, okay, this is how it works. And it stayed like that. Yeah. Fabulous.
Yeah.
But next year, it's completely different. So you've got to relearn, rework, shift and change. And again, that feeds the striving, doing, trying. Yeah. You know, it's exhausting.
Yes. And we are jumping through hoops enough during our working lives and our family lives. And now we've got to jump through loops when it comes to wellness. That is such a contradiction. So this has got to change. This will change because people will get tired of it.
I agree. And when you think of, you know, wellness, a lot of people think that wellness is just like we look at physical health, nutrition and exercise and weight management. And that's what a lot of, when he talks about, again, the gamification, the discovery points, although discovery is moving very much in the direction of mental health as well. Yeah. But very often the emphasis is on that.
Yeah.
And actually wellness is this, it's a holistic integration. It's of the physical and the mental, and something that we have to bring in here. But a lot of people will think maybe we shouldn't. It's a little bit woo-woo. But it's the spiritual component. It's what your belief. What are you connected to? Do you connect to something higher than yourself? This incredible universe. Is it religion? Is it, what is it for you? Because, you know, research is showing more and more of a connection to that is helping with mental illness.
Absolutely.
And it's overlooked. It's all overlooked, isn't it? So wellness is not just how many times you go to gym. There's a lot more to that, and all those areas need to be explored, I think, Nick.
They really do. And then our next question came from actually a client of mine. His name is Derek. This is a very fit individual, someone who probably is a little too much of a striver. And he says, I don't think people running wellness days can go deep enough. They don't seem either qualified to really help me make better choices or have enough lived experience to take me seriously. I find them a bit of a waste of time, especially when a 23-year-old biokineticist is going on about BMI when my body fat is 12%. Yeah, I love that.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's fantastic as well. So much to be said there. I wish we actually had more time to get more feedback, because this is telling us a tremendous amount. What do you think of wellness days, Nick? What are your thoughts?
So this is how I see it. Many companies have got budgets, and those budgets don't really extend to wellness, but they have to have medical aid for their staff. And most medical aid providers, be it Discovery, Momentum, doesn't really matter who, will provide free wellness days because your staff are medical aid members. And what happens during those wellness days is you get a green juice, you get to go on a scale, you get a pinprick blood test, you get a very inexperienced nurse wrap a tape measure around your waist and pop you on a scale and tell you what your BMI is, which is ridiculous, and you get points or you don't get points. And some people really avoid these wellness days because they just bring trauma, and other people rush for them because they bring them points and they can go and, you know, they can go and get a bucket of popcorn when they go to movies on the weekend. I know I'm being flippant and I know I'm making light of them, but this is, I'm jaded, okay? I'm very jaded with these things because I used to do them as well, and I really didn't feel like I was making any difference in the lives of the people that came to speak to me. That it is much, much deeper than going through the motions of what we used to do in a wellness day. Very frustrating. And you do need people to man and to run these productions, and they're not qualified. They don't have the qualifications that a nutritionist or a breathwork practitioner or someone with 20 or 30 years of experience can offer. So it's not helping. This should change if we really want to make a difference in the lives of people that we work with. And I think that is the objective, but we don't know how.
So, and I mean, the wellness days, and I know that a lot of companies have, you know, there's a lot of frustration around it because a lot of the employee engagement is low, you know, when it comes to these wellness days. Just listen to, was it Derek who said that, right? So, you know, that's his experience of the wellness day. He doesn't even enjoy it. And then you have some wellness days where they have the additional things which make them a lot more fun. I mean, how many times you talk about you've been involved, I've been involved, I've gone and they've said, okay, let's do a breathwork session. And all of a sudden they've plopped me in the middle of this wellness day to do a breathwork session, and people are walking past and going, well, what are you doing? What is this about? So people have no idea.
Yeah.
And then I'll do the breath work and then off I go and then off they go. And there's no impact because they have no, the culture behind it is not supporting these offerings. So yeah, interesting. Interesting. It's not to say that they're all bad. I mean, there's absolutely a place for them, but it has to be a part of something much bigger supporting this shift in a core culture, right?
It does. That's a wellness that's not going to change the trajectory of the health of your employees. It's just a part, I should say, part of the picture. And then the last question came from Tanya, who is actually a longtime friend of mine. She's in fact the head of HR for Nestle Africa. Then she moved on to Malaysia. Then she became head of HR Global for Nestle in Switzerland, and now she's in Australia. So this is a lady who has been in this industry for a good 20 years, and she really knows, I mean, if anyone knows what she's talking about. And her comment was to measure the impact on productivity, not the lead indicators of how many people actually attended your wellness session. So what happens in the months following these sessions? Has it made, and that's where we should be measuring, has it made an impact down the line? And no one is measuring that. I guarantee you no one is measuring that. This is the problem.
So that's why, as we said, it just becomes the tick box. Yeah. Becomes the tick box. We're doing it. That's what we have to do. And, you know, it's not to say, because there are companies who are putting in a lot of money and a lot of effort into shifting and trying to change the culture. But I wonder if they are approaching it in the right way. So I came across some interesting numbers. So the Occupational Care South Africa, OCSA, estimates that absenteeism is costing the local economy around 12 to 16 billion rand per year. Sure. And the Human Capital Review places that number even higher at 19.144 billion rand. And so employee wellness is, it's like no longer this peripheral concern, right? It has to be a strategic imperative. So it can no longer just be the ticking the box.
Yes.
And that's why, I mean, I brought up wellness, and perhaps the shift is looking and going back to that, can I be well now, is going back to this idea of wellness and wellness days as wellness, like we want to get there to the well-being, the being well in the moment. And I keep harping on this, Nick, because I think that it is it's not understood correctly. To, you know, we all have these habits of how we see the world, how we show up, how we interact with one another. And if we don't start going to those core beliefs that will drive those habits, we can have as many of these external things that are trying to push and nudge us in the right direction. But if we don't start finding that core, and that starts with inner corporate, deciding who are we, what do we stand for, not just in life and what are we offering our clients, but who are we, from, if we go back to the spiritual, the soul of this business, what is the soul, what do we want, how do we want to feel, and we look at the wellness, the well-being, then I think things can start to shift. It's very, very difficult to change habits. It's very difficult to change mindsets. It doesn't just happen in a day, and it certainly doesn't just happen in a workshop and over a few weeks. We're talking about beliefs that people have been carrying for years and years and years, and they all come together in a corporate, and you want them to work well and you want them to be productive.
Yeah.
If you don't understand that, and you don't understand that that's how deep it is, you're missing the point.
I agree.
Missing it.
No, I completely agree. It comes down to your values as an organization. It's like, how do we value, what are our values around well-being for ourselves and for our organization, for our employees?
Yeah.
And very few, I'm sorry to say, a lot of South African companies don't look at it that way. We are, in South Africa, we are living in fight flight 90% of the time, and that extends to our organizations. It's just bottom line. And if it doesn't speak to core, if it doesn't speak to production and, you know, turning a profit, then it's secondary. And This is why we don't, in my opinion, why we fail to compete with the rest of the world, where I've been very lucky to work with many multinationals, and it's a very different mindset. That culture starts with leadership. It starts at the top. It starts with value systems, that looking after the health and well-being directly of our staff and their families is what makes companies, or what gives companies longevity for centuries. And no one's perfect. No organization's perfect. No one gets it right all the time. But there's a definitive, there's a real difference between companies, local companies, and those in other countries, and not necessarily multi-million dollar companies either. These can be small organizations. It's just a different culture. So how do we start changing the culture in South Africa? That's the question.
I mean, that's such a good point. And I mean, you know, and you spoke about the fight, flight, freeze, and you really, and it's also a sign of the times. People are competing. People are holding on to the job, their jobs. People are feeling really, really threatened. And you know, and I know, and I don't think we can overlook something as important as this. When people feel threatened in the organization, knowing that their jobs are at risk, perhaps, and they're operating from that fight, flight, freeze, you know how you show up. Your brain is not receptive to growing, to strategizing, to being creative. It doesn't happen in that space. Just from that point of view, and as you said, within the corporates, a lot of people don't feel like they are have security. So it's well packaged. Everything is well packaged. But if you just scratch beneath the surface, it's mayhem. You know, that's just from my experience as well. And yes, so you asked the question. So, you know, what is the way forward? Where to from here? You know, I often look at, I love watching sport, and I often look at team sports. I look at individual sport because you see so much in human nature, because it is almost magnified, right? We get to witness human beings who have mastered their art, their sport, their body, their mind. And that's what we're so often attracted to, is that self-mastery. And we very often put people on pedestals and we think, oh, it's just them. And then we get to see, well, you know, they got there one step at a time. So, you know, we talk about, and you know, I'm coming from a point of view of breathwork, because that's very much a part of the passion that I have. But I remember watching the World Cup rugby, and I remember watching the Irish rugby team, Nick. And it was a pivotal part of the game, and they all came together for a team talk. And the captain was talking, and you saw them all together take one deep breath, and they all sighed together. And they knew it, and they did it very consciously. And this was obviously something that the team have been doing, building this breath work, building this commitment, accessing it in the moment, shifting the situation in the moment, shifting the nervous system. You talk about Djokovic having this, people saying, you know, he is the mind master. And when people say, well, what is it that you do? And he says, conscious breathing. And I don't just want to talk about breathing, because when you talk conscious breathing, it's about bringing consciousness to the moment. So from my point of view, we talk about the depth of each individual who comes into a space, honoring that, knowing that, having this culture. For me, it's bringing consciousness into corporate. And with that consciousness, changing that culture. Well, what are your thoughts, Nick? I mean, from your point of view.
Yeah, so my first question when I'm just listening to you is, how do we even start? So it's got to start from the top. There's got to be a desire to do something differently. It's very difficult to go into an organization when the boss is drinking a six pack of beers every night and going through the cigarettes and couldn't care less. So it is tricky. That's it. The rest of the company culture can shift in and around leadership. It really can. It's just more difficult. So it is about bringing consciousness. So what I do very often, where I see things change, is I often get opportunities to go into companies and give keynote talks at events, to promote the book. And the talks are quite provocative. They do poke the bear. They're meant to. And I poke the bear specifically at those, at the leaders, at the bosses, to actually directly ask them, you know, what are they doing about their own health, their continuity planning? Because a lot of us feel invincible. We feel invincible until we go for that executive medical and find out that we are 6 weeks away from a stroke. So we've got to, unfortunately, and I can't find another way of saying it, it's almost scare people into realizing they've got to do things differently because life can't carry on the way it's been carrying on. We are largely as a society in denial of the severity of the stress that we're living under. And because we get out of bed every day and we jump in a cold shower and go to the gym, we think we're doing the work. We're not doing, that's not the work. So,
exactly.
You know, that's right. Not the work. That's just shocking your nervous system over and over again until it absolutely gives in. And you read the statistics earlier. You know, a lot of people are doing the biohacking, but my goodness, it isn't changing the facts that people are still dying young from stress-related disease. These are the facts. So, you know, integration, making this a cohesive initiative is the only way that we can get companies to change. But what concerns me more is how do you get in there and create a sense of urgency that our interventions to date are still not doing the job? And I think this is where you and I started our conversation, is because we are no strangers to getting into corporate environments and talking to people and prodding and getting people to think differently. So yeah, that's where I'm sitting with a big question mark as well. We know what to do, but how to get in there and do it and create that sense of urgency is a whole other story. And you know what? It's not up to the HR manager. I mean, I've worked with many, many HR managers over the years. It's not their decision to make, really. All of these projects that work come from leadership. In the old days, I used to be on 702 almost every week on a Saturday morning. Yes. At 5 o'clock in the morning. It would blow my mind as to how many execs of big organizations would call me at 6 a.m. on a Saturday saying, you have to come into my company, we've got to do something. And these were people who were insomniacs, obviously. They were people either insomniacs or they were getting up to go on for their ride in the morning. And unfortunately, those platforms have disappeared. So we've got to find other ways of reaching these individuals, these high-functioning corporate individuals who know they've got a problem, who know that they are not well, whose doctors have told them they have to do something, and do it not only just for them, but at a corporate level.
It's as we've said, it's a challenging one because of, especially because of the way we're living now. We're in this constant state of the fight flight, and when you are, you know, the nervous system has balanced, and then you can be more creative and you can think of these things. So it's that turning that around, Nick. And it's the bottom line. It's what people can afford and what companies can and can't afford. Mm. You know, you're talking about overhauling something that perhaps they think is working, or maybe it's, you know, maybe they get to look at it really closely and they're looking at absenteeism, they're looking at staff retention, they're looking at the state of staff mental health, and maybe they're not looking at that. But, you know, there is a cost involved. Yeah. There's a strategy, there's a shift. I'm so interested, Nick, when you did that show on a Saturday morning, you had all of these people phoning in, and you would go into a company, you know, and so often you're going to be telling people to behave in a certain way or make better choices in a certain way. And again, how did you approach that when we look at, we've got a group full of individuals and they all come from different walks of life with different histories and different ways of looking at the world?
Yes, you've got to be very, very sensitive to that. So, yeah, there's a certain amount that you can do in a group where you create a little bit of shock value, but also a little bit of camaraderie and a little bit of entertainment value. But there's a lot you have to do one-on-one. And that is where the magic happens, when you can talk in private one-on-one. And this is where it becomes a little unaffordable, but it's important. And this is probably only available to leadership, is where you can have one-on-one coaching sessions and really get to the bottom of where the issues are. And I've never found anybody in my 20 years of doing this who didn't want to live better. They might have stories that they tell themselves about why they can't. They might have bravado. They might, who knows what, we all have stories that we tell ourselves about why we can't do anything. But I think that when it comes down to our health and well-being and wanting to perform better in the world, and really it's just wanting to be happier, everybody has a soft belly. There's always a way to get something to that. I mean, I've worked with people who you know, have very little income, who depend on PUP for their primary source of food, and we have got them changing their minds just through education, not through force, not through giving them points, not through any coercive means, but just simply through education and creating rapport and understanding. It's magical what you can do one-on-one with a person. Yeah. And when that starts to trickle down and sideways in an organization, you see incredible things happening. You see people paying it forward. You see the energy in the room change. And that's where you start creating a corporate culture shift. It is incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And you know, I think that you spoke to something that's really, really important, is someone whose staple diet was maybe food that has very few nutrients,
yeah,
and maybe doesn't support clear, focused thinking and energizing throughout the day, right? Mm-hmm. And then they start to shift things. It's not about necessarily spending more money. It's spending it wisely. It's choosing the right food. The turning point is when they start to feel better. And I think that part of a corporate culture, and this is where the challenge is, because when I say feel into your body, people want to run and close the door and never come back.
Yeah.
Because we are a society that the only feeling we want is pleasure,
yeah,
or a feeling of winning, mm, or a feeling of achieving. Mm. Feeling into our bodies and actually getting a sense of how we're feeling. Like right now, I'm feeling low in energy. There's something I need to boost my energy and my focus in this moment. So what do people do? They don't think about it. They're not conscious of it at all. And what they would do, it would be the coffee, or it would be the fizzy drink, yeah, or it'll be going for a cigarette, that break, right? Mm-hmm. When you start to feel and connect mind, body, you get to sense, something's happening here, low in energy. Then maybe I would have the apple, or I'll have the glass of water, or maybe I'll do some breathwork exercises. So that's just on one, quite a superficial level. Mm-hmm. When we move into areas like this person who you were talking about, and they are really feeling that now that they've shifted their diet, they're showing up in a very different way. They're able to contribute in a meeting or in their particular situation in a very different way. And then they have the buy-in. Yeah. So that's the buy-in. It's how am I feeling and how am I shifting? So your one response to the answering of the question, when he goes to a wellness day and he's got someone who he sees as pretty inexperienced telling him how to do it, that doesn't feel congruent and well within him. It feels off, because he knows how he feels, and he's got someone else who's really just, you know, doing what she or he thinks is the right thing to do with not much EQ with that person. And there's just the sense of no connection, no growth, no listening, nothing happening. Yeah. So we're talking about there are many layers to this, and that's why it is complex. So it's not just the tick box. It's not just the wellness day. How do you get people to feel the change so that when they feel it, it integrates, you know? To stay motivated, Nick, and you know this, is very difficult. You've just got to look at people with New Year's resolutions. We know that by February, 90% of people's New Year's resolutions have just gone out the window.
Absolutely.
Because it requires motivation. Motivation is exhausting.
It is.
So it's those little things and going to the core and going to the person and supporting it culturally. Listen, there's a lot. There's a lot that needs to be unpacked. But I have to say, and especially because of breathwork, and breathwork is an embodied practice, it's less about the becoming. It's more about being. It's more about feeling. How am I feeling? And can I make the right choice now? Because I know how I felt the last time. And when you go more and more with feeling and then changing that habit, making the right decision in the moment, that's when the rewiring starts. Then you start to change the corporate culture.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially nowadays, where people are trying to depend more and more on technology to solve this problem for them.
Yes.
It can't.
Again.
Almost again. Cannot do that. Because it requires connection. And it's the one thing that cannot be touched by technology. Yes, there's support structures that technology can help with, certainly. But when it comes to making change and connection, as you said, it's a human skill. And that's amazing. Yeah. And that's something we really need to put our focus on.
That's it. And so when we look at mental health, because we know the numbers, mental health, depression, anxiety, stress, these numbers are rising. They're not lowering, Nick. They are rising. And we've got everything. Indeed. We've got the apps. We've got the technology. We've got all the information. So why is it increasing? Why is it getting worse? Because the most basic needs are not being met.
Yes.
And one of the basic needs is connecting. First of all, connecting with other people and self-connect. And the connection between mind and body. So when we are too much in our heads and it's those racing thoughts, and that's where we are. We know that the racing thoughts, they negatively impact the nervous system. And the way you're using your body can negatively impact the nervous system. So it's when we go back to those basics, then we can start to change it. Because if we've got these increasing numbers with all of these other interventions that are happening, why aren't they working?
Exactly. Now imagine being able to go to work and feel connected, feel seen, and feel like it's a place where you can calm your nervous system rather than the other way around. Now that's what we're talking about.
That's it. You don't have to hide it. You don't have to minimize how you're feeling. And at the same time, there's a place for it. If that makes sense, there's a play. We all understand that people have their good days, their bad days. People have times when they're high and got great energy, performance, focus, and there are times when they don't. What we want is a supportive environment.
Yeah.
And when there's a supportive environment, then change can happen. So, I have this dream, and the dream is to introduce a culture of conscious breathing into corporates.
Yeah.
Because as I said before, when I was talking about Djokovic, and he talks about conscious breathing, and people are like, what is it? And it's just a conscious breath brings you back to now. And I always imagine people getting into a lift in an organization, and you can have the CEO, you can have the security guard, you can have the PA, you can have the mayor, all of them climbing into the lift, and they all look at one another and they all have one beautiful inhale and an exhale, because the culture of the organization has instilled this way of breathing. So everyone breathes in, and they all sigh, and just like that, they're in the moment. They can engage or not, but it's that. And people, before they go into a meeting, before any meeting starts, it starts with 2 to 3 minutes of coherent breathing. And once there's the coherent breathing, then all of a sudden there's heart coherence, brain coherence. And so they show up after that as a coherent team, as opposed to all these individuals coming in, someone still worrying about the meeting before, the other one worrying about their kids at home and the exam they just wrote. This one, they've just had a result from the pathologist, and they coming in with all the different expectations, all the residue. Whereas if they take that conscious breath and breathe for those few moments, all of a sudden they're operating on another level. They get to feel how they're feeling. And then you have the core culture has shifted, and they're not afraid to bridge the mind and the body. They see the healing and the health, and no one looks at it as woo-woo, but they look at the science, because the science is there. The science is supporting it.
It's really exciting.
I see it as exciting if companies are prepared to see the wonderful opportunities that are out there.
And it doesn't have to cost a fortune. The first question is, how much is this going to cost? It varies. It depends on the organization, depends on the needs. It can be as expensive or as inexpensive as it needs to be. So let that, and it is, of course, a tax deductible, offering. So that's also something to consider.
Exactly. And when you think of the hybrid working system at the moment and how so many people are working from home, or even if they're in corporates, right now you can do so much online.
Yeah.
So you can appeal to so many people in one session online. And that's really cost effective for any organization.
Extremely.
As a maintenance program. to be able to dip in for that maintenance, for lots of people to check in at that particular time online. That's hugely cost effective. That wasn't available before COVID. You know, exactly. Only a few companies could offer that. Now every Tom, Dick and Harry has access to it. And so it should be used. It should be used, I think, specifically when it comes to maintenance. Really cost effective. That shouldn't be... It shouldn't be a stumbling block.
It shouldn't be.
I don't think. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that is really interesting. So I think, Nick, thanks for pulling back the curtain on what really works when it comes to workplace well-being. And I hope we have piqued some interest to people listening, especially if you are within an organization, if you're the kind of person who has to manage wellness days and, you know, you want to do something different and you want to do something that makes a difference, that actually works for a change, get in touch with either one of us. We're available all the time. You can reach us via social media channels. You can reach us via various websites. Obviously, the contact details will be in the show notes. And reach out and let's just have a conversation. That's where all of these things start, is just let's talk and see what's needed. And you'll be amazed what can happen with a few tweaks and changes and just a different perspective.
Exactly. A few tweaks and changes. It doesn't have to be a major overhaul. And when you start to see the shift in your employees and you start to see the magic that happens after something like that takes place, you ask the question, you know, why didn't we do it sooner? Mm. Why didn't we do it sooner?
Why didn't we do it sooner is always what people say. I love that.
Exactly. And the challenge is there, but it's not as if we're looking at this challenge and saying, you know, it can't be done. We know how.
Yeah.
But it requires a shift and quite a big shift. Yeah. But I'm excited about it, as I said, Nick. And I like to say that we are, you know, I'd like to say visionaries in this, because we've got to be doing something different.
Yeah.
Because you can't continue doing the same thing and these numbers are rising.
Yeah. And look, it takes experience. You know, we've both been doing this for so many years that you start to see where the problems are. You can see where the shortfalls are and how to fix them.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. Amazing, Nick. What a wonderful opportunity being able to talk about something that we're both very passionate about.
Yes.
And bringing light into, you know, just shining the light on areas that perhaps people were not so aware of, and they get to see it and go, okay.
Yeah. You spend so much of your life at work, you may as well get something out of it.
Exactly. Exactly. And wouldn't that make the world a much better place?
So good. Yeah. The next stop is schools. Get that into schools, yes. And we are really winning. Mm.
Exactly, Nick. Thank you so much. Such a pleasure to have this time with you. Thank you.
And you. Well, that's a wrap on another episode of the Reinvent Health podcast. A huge thanks to Nikki Seberini for pulling back the curtain on what really works when it comes to workplace well-being. If you're part of a company that wants to stop ticking boxes and start changing lives, do reach out. This is exactly what we do. And once again, a shout out to our sponsor, Ultra Human. If you're ready to take well-being beyond motivational posters and food platters, the Ultra Human Ring offers real-time data that can support your team's mental and physical health and gives leadership the tools to actually see what's working. If this episode got you thinking, share it with your HR team or your boss. It might just start the conversation that changes everything. Don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and I'll see you next time.